Yeah, we're rolling.
Okay, we left off over here on Daf Yud Zayin Amadeus. Amar Rava, Kol Shebezav Tamei, the Nezikin Mishalem Nezik Shalem. Kol Shebezav Tahor, the Nezikin Mishalem Chatzi Nezik. Rashi very, very tersely explains, Kol Shebezav Tamei Mashma Negia Mamash. Kol Shebezav Tahor, Kegon Shezara Chayfetz Al Adam, Have Tahor. Ubenezikin, Kein Tsoros, Chatzi Nezik. Namely, that Rabbi is pointing out that just as in the world of Zav, we have a difference between Gufo and Kocho, who had been in the Zikin, we have a distinction between Gufo and Kocho. The Gemara asks the next line, Barava Tsoros Asa Lashmina. What over here? I mean, is the Chiddush of Rava that we have a difference of Kocho in the Zikin that has a different status? So the Gemara says, no, no, no. The Gemara moves over. Look, Rava Egla Moshechas Bekaron Ka Mashmala. That Rava is teaching us that we have over here an extension of Gufo. Up to this point, if we go back to the Braisa that we quoted earlier, Behema Mu'edes Ahalach Kedarko L'Shaber, the middle of the thin lines, Keitzad behema shenichnas al achatzer v'zika begufa derech ilucha v'sara derech ilucha beukav shaleha b'shalav shaleha b'prumbi yesh v'piya b'zug shebitzavara v'chamor b'masa'o. The broadest we extended the guf of an animal was to chamor b'masa'o. What is the uniqueness of chamor b'masa'o? So Tosus over there pointed out, afal gav dikvar shana b'shalav she'aleha. Even though we already discussed the saddle, it's Triach Ashmeinam. We have a chiddush by the chamor. V'fisha'ein masui shal chamor mehudak u'mechubar lo kibishar behema. V'sal kadai tachtalo havi kegufo. That on one hand, you know, we're dealing with that which is attached to the chamor, but it is not tightly attached. It's not mehudak. That's what Tosis points out. And so we have a chiddush that even if it's not mehudak, even if it's not tightly attached, it's considered to be gufo. And now Rava comes to extend it from the chamor b'masa'o to the world of egla moshechet b'karon, that as long as it's mechubar in any manner, that's still considered to be gufo as opposed to kocho. Okay, that's nice. But the question is, what does this have to do with Zav? What in the world does this have to do with Zav? Zav, we pointed out, is a dinin in Maisa, right? That it's a din. Rashi pointed out that Zav Mashma Negia Mamash. The Zav has to touch something. Maga. It's a din in Maisa, and the Kocho is beyond that level of Maaseh. But now we've moved over. So originally we thought maybe that's what we're learning from Rava, that we're distinguishing between Maisa of Adam, a maisa of a behema, and Koach. But now we said, no, that's obvious. That dinatoros we know. Now we're defining the cheftza. So what is the cheftza? What is the fact that the wagon is considered to be an extension of the goof of the behema have to do with Zav? Namely, when we were dealing at first, we thought we were talking about the difference between Kocho and Gufo in terms of the world of Maisa and Mela. But that we know there's a din of Tsoros. But now we want to say where the Chiddush is in the world of Cheftza. What does the world of Cheftza have to do with the world of Zav? So here we have two directions within the Rishonim, one of which Rashi takes, the other is hinted at by Tosfos, but it's clearest in the Ravid and in the Meiri. What direction? So let's look at Rashi. Rashi was bothered by this. Look at Rashi. Egla Moshechet Bikaron, Asa Lashmuinan, De Bizav Tamei, Im Holcha Karon Shehazav Aleha, Algabe Kalim, then Tamei Mishum Medras Hazav. Ubenezikin Name, Egla Shemashla Bikaron, Algabe Kalim, Kagufa Havi Velo Kitsoros. Namely, that just as in the world of Zav, we extend the goof of the Zav via Medras to other objects that the Zav is on, so also in the world of Nezikin, we extend the Hagdara of Guf to that which is being that which is attached to the animal as well. Namely, we're dealing over here with an extension of the Guf. That in Zav we extend the Guf of the Zav to the Medras, and in Nezikin we extend the Guf of the Behema to the Karon. The problem of that's what Rashi says, right? In other words, we moved from the world of Maga Hazav to the world of Medras. The problem is threefold. Firstly, the Metzius of Medras is different than the Metzius of Karon. Medras is a din that which the Zav is on top of, that has the status of an avtuma. I mean, if the Zav lies on a mattress, then that mattress has the status of an avtuma. And therefore, if the Zav is going to be on a wagon which goes over Kalim, so the wagon is going to be Medras Hazav, and then the Kalim that it touches are going to become Tameh as though they touched the Zav himself. Masha Enkein, we're not dealing over here necessarily with a principle of being on top of. The world of Guf is extended even to that which is being pulled by the animal. Namely, both of them are extensions, but they're very, very different sort of extensions. That's just, okay, it's still, they're comparable. In other words, that we extend the Guf. But the second issue is, who says that the din of Medras Hazav is that we view the Medras as Guf Hazav? Who says that it's a halacha that we view the mattress as the Zav? You know, that we have over here a Zav being cloning himself into his mattresses. I would never have learned that way learning Chumash. I would have understood the Torah tells us that when a Zav lies on a mattress, the mattress is an Avtuma. Not that the mattress is a Zav. The mattress is an avtuma. We have dinim by nida. We have dinim. We have all sorts of dinim in terms of mishkav and medras and merkav v'chule. I don't know. You know, we would say that when a zav sits on a saddle, the saddle becomes a zav. In other words, the saddle has the status of a. Okay, so it's a stretch. But again, we understand what Rashi was bothered by. But the third problem is the greatest problem, and that if you have the page that I gave out, that we have a difference in halacha. In other words, Meilat have a difference in Metzius. Okay. In other words, Rav Parnas used to speak of the fact we have halachic Metzius, that things aren't always the way they look, the way they appear. In other words, halachically, maybe the Metzius of being on top of would be the equivalent of being the Metzius of pulling. Maybe. Maybe in terms of the Musagim. So we can come up with a chiddush that maybe a mattress is really a clone of a Zav. Maybe the saddle is a clone of the Zav. Maybe a seat is the clone of the Nida, etc. But we have the problem is, let's look over here at Yerushalmi that the Rashba quotes. Hayasa tavla munachas uzuchit aleha, dorsa al hatavla, venishbura hazuchit, ala tavla meshalem nezek, shalem al zuchit meshalem chatzi nezek. Up to this point, what the Yerushalmi is doing is simply giving us the din of tsroros. Namely, that which comes in contact with the goof of the animal, that's nezek shalem, that which the animal, you know, it breaks via his koach, that you pay chatzi nezek. But then the Yerushalmi continues. Hayasa tavla munachas zo al gabe zo. Here we're dealing with call it, you know, it's with slats, with surfaces that are one on top of the other. Dorsa al ha'elyona meshalem nezek shalem, nishbara hatachtona meshalem chatzi nezek. That if we're dealing with a situation where we have a number of surfaces, no, let's take the mattresses. We have a number of mattresses, one on top of the other, and an animal steps on the top mattress, and that puts pressure through the mattresses to the bottom mattress, and the bottom mattress explodes. So we say that on the top mattress, where the top mattress the animal actually stepped on to explode, that would be nezek shalem. When the bottom mattress explodes, that's chatzi nezek. What would be the din in this situation by Zav?
All tuma.
They're all avtuma. Namely, how? In other words, if we want to learn like Rashi, that we are saying that what our Mishnah is teaching us is just like in Zav, we have a din of medras that extends gufo So also we have a parallel situation of an extension of guf in the world of in the world of Nezikin. L'chora, the classic case of medras or 10 mattresses. That's the classic case, that the bottom mattress has the same status as the top mattress, even though the connection between them is purely one of pressure. One is pressing and one, in other words, and we're saying that in the world of Nezikin, that's not the case. In other words, that pressure, in other words, if the mattresses would have been sewed together, then we could say, okay, mechuber, maybe that's like the karon, maybe that's like the wagon, which is being one item. But the moment that they're not connected, they're simply one on top of the other, in the world of Nezikin, we say that that's kochav. So how can we build on medras? We have a difference in terms of mitzius, we have a difference in terms of concept, and we have a difference in terms of halacha. Yeah.
And couldn't we just dodge that by calling it a machlokas rava in the Yerushalmi?
Yes, we could say this machlokas rava and the Yerushalmi. Yeah, we could. Okay. I'm just pointing out, it's not like three strikes and you're out. I'm just pointing out that that's why I think other Rishonim looked elsewhere to answer our problem, that the moment we moved over to the Cheftza, so we, you know, like how does this relate to the world of Zav? So as opposed to Rashi, who was trying to build on Tumas Medras, what did the Ravid and the Meiri, what were they working off of? What unique halacha in the world of Zav that usually we know from Hilchos Chanukah, because this is the issue of how the Romans managed to be metame the oil which was in the closed vessel?
Hesed.
We have a concept of hesed, that if the Zav causes an object to move, even though he doesn't touch it directly, he'll be touching it via a stick, etc., that also has a status of an av tuma. Okay, but here the advantage of the Ravid's direction is that Hesed is within the world of Maaseh, namely that we want to extend not the Cheftza of the Zav. In other words, not like Rashi wanted to say that the tenth mattress is like the Zav. No, we're not extending the Cheftza of the Zav. What we are doing is we are expanding the Maaseh of the Zav. What's the difference, in other words, between Maaseh and Kochav? We say when you have the Maaseh of the Zav, we have a world of Negiah, that's Avtuma. When you have Koch, that's Kolshe Zav Tame. When you have Koach of the Zav, that's Tohar. So classically, Negiah is touching, pushing, shoving. That's Negiah, lying down on. Classically, Koach is throwing something. Here we're saying, what if you don't, in between? We're not touching it. On the other hand, we're not throwing it. What we're doing is we're causing it to move by pushing it. We're pushing it with a stick. That's considered to be an extension of the world of the Maisa Zav. On that would be Kol Sheba Zav Tame. We're dealing over here with the world of defining the act of the Zav as opposed to the Koach of the Zav. Pulling, pushing, and causing something to move, that's the Maisa of the Zav. Masha Enkein, Zorek, throwing, pouring, shooting, that's already Koach, that would be Kol Sheba Zav Tohar. So parallel to that, in the world of Nezikin, when we have the animal pulling the wagon, that's Hesed, right? And we're pulling the wagon just like that we would be pushing something with that's attached to the Zav, that would be considered to be the Maisa of the Zav. It's a very interesting direction to see it inside of the Meiri. We could look at the beginning of the, or at the end of the first paragraph. Chen kayotzibo zav shemashach bekaron, that if a zav were to pull a wagon, the tohar al gabe hakaron, and there was a person on top of the wagon who was tohar, and he's being pulled by the zav. The zav, in other words, think of a rickshaw. The zav is pulling the rickshaw, and you have someone sitting in the back of the rickshaw. Hari ha-tohar tameh kilu hisit ha-zav begufo shel karam. And with my nafkamin, if the zav takes a stick and pushes, or he takes two rods and he pulls, right? Even though he didn't touch the person, Ela Yedei Meshicha, but he's causing the person to move. That's called Hesed. Kol Shekein Mazav Al HaKaron, in other words, if the Zav were to be sitting on the Karon, HaKelev Shindidrusu HaKaron Aleihem, right? In other words, that would be certainly Hesed. But again, not the Hesed of Medras that we're dealing with the Cheftza. We're dealing that this would be considered to be the act of the Zav. It's as though the Zav is touching those items. And therefore, it would be very, very parallel to the world of Nezikin, where you know we're also viewing the animal pulling the karon as being an extension of the at this point of the maisa of the animal. This is considered to be the act of the animal, not sroros. This is considered to be the act of the maisa. In other words, according to Rashi, what we learned out from Azav is how to extend the cheftza of the Zav to include Medras. And parallel to that, we extend the cheftza of the animal to include the karon. Within the Ravid, we're not extending the cheftza of the Zav. We are expanding the act of the Zav, that the act of the Zav, the Maisa of Gufo, is not only touching and pushing and pulling, but causing something to move with, in other words, as opposed to throwing and pouring, etc. The first category would be Gufo, would be the act of Gufo, and the second category would already be Kocho. And so here also we're extending that the fact that the animal is pulling the Karam, that's considered to be an extension of the act of the animal. It's not koach of the animal, it's the act of the animal. Okay? So Rashi is dealing with the Cheftza, and the Rav is dealing with the Maisa. Both of them are Shayach, right? In other words, we need both of them to be Chayav. You have to have both. The question is, where over here, what is Rava teaching us from the world of Zav? So Rashi compares it to Tumas Medras, and the Rav compares it to the Rav and the Meiri, and Tosus also, to a certain degree, brings in the world over here of Hesed, as opposed to Zrika, that would be considered to be Koach. With all this in mind, I saw a tshuva. I'm certain that it's a misreading, but I don't have the original of Rav Belsky that I printed out for you on the opposite side of the page, which has a lot of halakha l'maisa ramifications. Just, you know, it's some toilets have an, you know, it's Rav Belsky's yahrzeit, I think, is this week. And so the OU is putting out examples of his tshuvos to show his gadlus, which is it's a very beautiful idea, etc., and all different topics, right? So this was, since I'm, you know, having more time to look at OU site when I'm sitting, you know, it's just getting infusions or whatever. So some toilets have an optical sensor and flush automatically when one walks away from the toilet. What should a person do if they find themselves on Shabbos in a place that only has automatic toilet? This is a very, very, very real problem in going to hotels, you know, where it's nowadays, where, you know, you don't want to be, most people don't want to be in a one-star hotel. You want to be in a classy, where do you find a classy hotel that has something to press or to push, you know, where it's, et cetera. So he quotes Rav Belsky, discusses this question, and rules that if there's no other option, it's permitted to use such a toilet. He explains that activating the toilet by movement of one's body is referred to in halacha as kocho, literally one's power. For example, if one tears a cloth with their hands, that's a direct malacha. If one shoots an arrow through a cloth, that's kocho. Let's just read it together and then dissect it, okay? On a Torah level, one is liable in both cases, but regarding rabbinic prohibitions, there's a difference. The Gemara permits pouring wastewater on the side of a boat and letting it run into the sea. In other words, the issue is that the ocean, the sea, is a karmelis. The boat is a reshus hayachid. You're not allowed to be motzi from a karmelis to reshus hayachid. But the Gemara says that kocho lo gazru be karmelis. The Ritva in Shabbos explains that pouring wastewater directly into the sea is a rabbinic violation, carrying from a private domain to a karmelis. Nevertheless, Chazal permitted this due to consideration of kovod habrios, human dignity, so long it's being done indirectly by means of kocho. Similarly, in the case of one who uses an automatic toilet, it's permitted because of Kavod HaBrios, since it's activated indirectly by means of kocho. One must be mindful that if the lights turn on when one enters the bathroom, then it's forbidden to do so. One cannot violate a Torah prohibition, even in a situation of Kavod HaBrios. Rabelski over here, I don't know if this is what he actually wrote, okay? What says over here is making a lot of assumptions, one of which we're currently learning about, and that is, how do you define masa and how do you define kocho? Now, he's dealing with how do we define what happens when a person activates a sensor via his body movement? That's really the ikar over here. And he wants to say that is kocho, and therefore, if the activation is on, you're activating something which is aser d'oraisa, then if you're activating something which is aser d'oraisa, so that would be aser, kocho kagufo. If you're activating something that would be aser midrabanan, here we have a heter machmas kavod habrios. So let's start off, is activating, in other words, the heter is only by kocho, not by gufo, right? In other words, he's bringing a raya from a Gemara dealing with pouring. Pouring is the equivalent of shooting an arrow, is the equivalent of throwing, right? That's kocho. And so we have a heter that kocho is mutter in a situation of an iser drabanan, right? Because what he claims, because of kavod habrios. But our question is creating, causing a sensor to go on via body movement, is that kocho? By what means would that be kocho?
There's no koach involved, right? Koach is transfer of the force of your body's movement into another object. There's no force at all.
Exactly. What we're pointing out over here is that kocho is when you don't do something with your body, but rather you throw an object, you shoot an object, you throw an object, you pour an object, and that's what causes a damage. That's what's called kocho. Masha'en came, that which you do with your body, that's gufo. In which if you push someone, if I were to walk backwards and push someone with my body, that would be gufo. That's not a din of kocho. We have a question over here that how do we view it when you're not doing a conscious act by your body of moving something, but rather it happens memela. You walk into an elevator and your weight, which is simply part of you, causes all sorts of sensors to be mevaseh, to set, the elevator that's now going to work harder or less hard, etc., based on your weight. Someone else moves in, and then that the elevator is going to go at the same pace, no matter how many people are in, because it feels the weight, and then it manages to, via all the sensors, to give the right amount of electricity to deal with this weight. Now here, it's you, it's your weight. So here it's you and it's your body. So that is an issue, that is a question, but no one calls that kocho. In other words, it's not kocho. It's the question of how do we view the body's existence? In other words, the fact that I exist, and because I exist, things change. In other words, is that something I have to be careful about on Shabbos? That's an issue. But to call it kocho l'chora is A, very, very strange. Yes?
Wouldn't it depend on how a sensor works?
B, the question is there really a difference between a sensor that flushes water and a sensor that turns on light? It's called one din d'oraisa and one a din d'rabanan. Why would one be a din d'oraisa and one be a din d'rabanan?
I think he's assuming that the light is a light, that the turning on of the light is a malach d'oraisa. It seems to be something.
Okay, but generally we speak about two issues. We speak about one issue is the bulb, as whether we have over here a din of mavir, but then we have electricity, and to the best of my knowledge, the world generally views closing electrical circuits as a din of mavir as well. It's a machlokas, in other words, whether it's bona v'chule. Maybe that's what he's saying. That maybe if we're dealing. And then it would depend if whether the lights are incandescent lights or they're LED lights or they're...
He could mean that, or he also could mean that it's a question of Mokshis in a Sifli Gufa.
So it could be that there are other issues involved. In other words, before we get to what other, issues, just one more Ha'ara. I searched for this Ritva that he quoted, high and low. The Ritva on Shabbos is a very tricky thing, because I don't know what year he wrote the Tshuva. We have a Ritva which is published in like the 5-volume Ritva. That's not the Ritva. That's the Ran. And we have a Ran which is published on Shabbos. That's not the Ran. That's a Rishon, the unknown Rishon. We call that the Miyuchas L'Ran, and we call the Ritva HaMiyuchas L'Ritva. And the real Ritva only came out a number of years ago. Rav Rachman's grandfather began putting out the Ritva on Shabbos. They found the manuscript. He was a Rav in Muncie, Rav Hesher Rachman's father. Began putting out the Ritva on Shabbos, and finally it was all put out by Mosada Rav Kook. And that's what we call the Ritva. So in all of the Ritvas, in the pseudo-Ritva, the real Ritva, I couldn't, in other words, what we do find in the Gemara is that the statement, Kochal Bekarmelis Lo Gazru. And Tosis asked the question, but we have other instances in the Gemara where Kochal Bekarmelis Gazru. And so Tosis gives one answer. The Ritva gives an answer that here we're dealing with Dover Shi'i. You have this wastewater on the boat. What are you going to do with it? Right? So Iefshar, Makom Acher, Bechule. I couldn't find anyone who says that the Heter is Kavod Habrios. In other words, that we have a Heter of Kocho B'makom Kavod Habrios. I couldn't find that in the Rishonim. So A, why is this Kocho? B, why is this in Isur Drabanan? C, why is this, where do we have a heter of Kavod Habrios to be over an Isur Drabanan, Bekum Vaseh? So it appears to me that the issue is a very, very different issue. The issue is one, as Benayel pointed out, I wouldn't call it Melacha Shein Tzricha Gufa, I would call it more Psikresha, namely that you're getting up from the toilet because you want to pick up your pants. And ipso facto, right, when you get up from the toilet, the water begins to flow. You look around, that's a psikresha, and it's like you open your refrigerator and wow, the light went on. In other words, there are those that say that even though I'm happy the light went on because I can now see in the refrigerator, and I'm happy the water flushed because now my waste is no longer to be smelly in the toilet, but I don't want to be over Isurim, right? Maybe that's also called the psikresha d'lo nichale. And then if we can link the psikresha d'lo nichale with two drabanans, etc., that's a direction that most poskim go nowadays. Not to view this as kocho, but to view it as an issue of psikresha, that perhaps it's lo nichole, and the Rishonim hold psikresha lo nichole with one drabanan is mutter, and with two drabanans is certainly mutter, and then the question is, David's question, how does the sensor work? Maybe we can get it down to the fact that we have a two drabanans, yes?
I actually intended my question to be on the Koho aspect of it. I mean, I'm not 100% sure how a sensor works, but I think that it works by shooting out light rays, and it reflects off your body back into the machine.
Yes.
So perhaps he's suggesting that's considered like a type of Zrika.
I understood that it works by that when your body moves, it breaks. There is like an ultraviolet light or something that we can't see. And when you go through it, it breaks that. And the moment that it breaks that, then the sensor says, there's a person here and I have to do something. That's how it works in the lights in Englewood on the lawns. And that when you walk by, all of a sudden the lights go on. And in most places where they have automatic doors, that when you get close to the door opens up.
Because the difference is that for the lawns or for the automatic doors, well, it depends on which kind of automatic doors. Like, for opening and closing, there are two different mechanisms.
Nahon.
Right. But, there's some that have, the sensor in one place, and have, like, a receiver on the other side, and they communicate to each other. That's not how a toilet works, because there's nothing on the other side.
Right.
It's just the
movement.
The person's body in the way, right? there's a clock that probably measures in microseconds. But if they get if the photon bounces back within a certain time,
you're bouncing back.
In other words, if we're dealing with your bouncing back via your body, maybe that would be considered to be like shooting an arrow. Maybe that would be considered like throwing something. Right, that's possible. Okay, so that would thank you very much.
But it's still not your koach. It's just your body happens to be in the way. It's not.
That's the question.
You don't throw the photon. That's not how photons work.
Yeah, I say, anyway, so this is, again, I don't know what year he wrote the Tshuva. I don't know what understanding. You know, it's like we find some Achronim being matter electricity, so because in their time they had no real concept of how electricity really works. And so if someone said, well, you throw this and you throw this, then okay, so we can compare it to Zrikat Chetz, etc. But now that we, you know, we're dealing with wave and with particle theory, etc., it just puts everything into a totally different framework. Okay, in any case, so just pointing out that, in other words, when in Yirtzeh Hashem, when you deal with the world of Koach, so take into account the world of, we have over here a sense of Koach where we have a common denominator between Zav and Nezikin. That's what Rava is telling us. Is this also the din of Koach in other places? That lends itself to be seen. Yes.
I'm just telling you what I meant when I said that when I distinguish between nichalei and lo nichalei is that maybe the flush is lo nichalei, but the light is certainly is probably nichalei. Maybe that's why they don't explain why one's derived and one's derabanan. But if right, it's lo nichalei, that's derabanan. If it's nichalei, then it
could be. In other words, again, from simply reading the tshuva, it appears that in other words that the light. That the mechanism, as was pointed out, that's havara, where you have light and heat, as opposed to something within the sensor where you may be missing the light and the heat, and that would be drabana. But again, nowadays, I think that most light fixtures are also drabana. Okay, but again, the hefter for kavod abrios in a kumva say, I'm not aware of. What does one do is a very big problem. In other words, how do you deal with being in a hotel with such situations? Probably the best thing would be, I mean, although it would, you know, I guess COVID abuse would be to buy an air freshener, but probably the best thing would be to tape over the sensor before Shabbos and then just to use the toilet and just to use an air freshener in the bathroom until after Shabbos and then, you know, to take care of it. You know, it's the same thing that you would do if you were in a hotel that had a key, a card to open. Once upon a time, we used to have keys, right? In other words, fancy hotels no longer have any keys. And then if you have a card, so either you're going to ask a non-Jew to open your door, or with the permission or of the hotel, you would have to simply tape the entire mechanism that the door really would never totally lock. And with heavy-duty masking tape, etc. And that basically your room is open all Shabbos, and you put your precious belongings in your safe and hope for the best, depending what neighborhood you're in, etc. But these are very real issues that you know that come up, in other words, within the modern world. Okay, so let's continue in the Gemara. That's Shlav Aleph is the world of Zav and the world of Egla, Moshechet v'Karo. Shlav Bet Tanu Rabbanan Tarnegolim Shehayu Machatetim B'Chevel Dli. Okay, you have these chickens who are pecking at a rope that holds a bucket. Unifsak hachevel, they win, and they break the rope. The nishbar hadli. So here we have two things that are broken, both the chevel and the dli. So the halacha is mishalmin nezek shalem. Namely, what are we saying about the breaking of the dli? That this is not X but Y. It's not. It's not kocho, but gufo. This is considered gufo. Now we have this big kli called rope and bucket, and this is being worked on by the body of the chicken, you know, by its beak, and this is considered to be this is gufo. This is, you know, this is the gufa, that the beak is the same as the body of the animal, as the leg. So this is a tolda of regel. Boy, Rava, dorsa al hakli velo shevarto v'nisgalgel b'makom acher v'nishbar mahu. Basar meikara azlina v'gufehu, odilma basar tavar mana azlina utsaros ninu. What is Rava's question conceptually? What is new in the equation? What do we have over here that Rava says can be viewed from two perspectives?
The act that you did versus the tozah of how the nezek happened.
In other words, we have a process. What happens when you have a process? You have, you know, a process begins at a certain point and it ends with the breaking of the kli. In other words, what are we defining as the maisa nezek? The beginning of the process, basar meikara, or the end of the process, the breaking of the kli, nafkamina. At the beginning, the goof of the animal is involved, right? Dorsa al kli. At the end, it's the koach of the animal. The animal put this kli into motion, right? This is like, you know, like an arrow or throwing it, etc. And that would be kocho. So do you, in this situation, do you pay nezek shalem or do you pay chatzi nezek? That's a valid question, right? Okay, the problem is, what is the answer of the Gemara? So the Gemara says, Tifshot le midrabba. Oh, why did Rabba have this question? His Rebbe already gave the answer. Da'ama Rabba, zara kli mirosh hagag, uba acher ushivaro b'makel, patur. Damrinan le, mana tevira tavar. That we say in this situation, Rabba says, the person who hits the, you know, it's the, someone tosses a vase off the roof, and then someone hits it with a baseball bat before it hits the ground. The one who hits it with the baseball bat is patur, because mana tvira tavar, he broke a broken kli. Look, in other words, and so this somehow answers our question. Somehow. So the Gemara says, l'rabba pshitale, whatever the answer is, that was obvious to Rabba, but l'rabba miboyle. And in other words, then the Rabba knew that according to his Rebbe, this was pashut, but he still had a problem with it. Okay. The question is, what exactly we are being medayik from Rabba to the din of Rabba? So I think that, you know, it's the, you know, it's the, so we have over here three machokas rishonim, minimally. We have Rashi, we have the Yesh Omrim of the Ramban, and we have the Ravid. Three different understandings of Rabba, which would to answer Rabba's question. So I think that Rashi probably is the way most of us would have learned. Let's look at Rashi. Basar meikara shidachafto ubegufa tavarmana. That's the first side, that when you begin a process, so we view the maisa nezek as the beginning of the process, and it's broken by the guf. And then we bring in Rabba, shvarba makel kodem shenach, that he preempts the fact that this would have broken anyway, and he breaks it with the baseball bat. Pater hamishabro v'chayav hazorek. Alma basar meikara azlina, v'hoel v'sofel lishaver kishianuach kamisha shivarohu dami. So what does Rashi tell us from the fact that the second person is pater? What does that imply?
The first guy
is chayev. Okay, because so kanire basar meikara, that we go according to the beginning of the process. Because if we would go after the end of the process, what would be the halacha? The first one would be Potter, and the second one would be Chayev. Maybe the moment that we're Mechayev, the second person, Kanere, that means that the first person is off the hook, and the moment that would be Potter, the second person, Kanere, the first person is on the hook. Since Rabba Potter is the second person, it means we're not going at the end of the Talich, Kanere, that we go after the beginning of the Talich. That's what Rashi says. Okay? Fine. Very, very nice and neat. However, let's look together at the Ramban. The Ramban says, "V'yesh derech acheret v'perush." Yes.
Just a question on Rashi. Is there an assumption that the kli that was thrown, the derech of it is to break if it hits the ground? Meaning, if there was something necessarily break?
It's an excellent, excellent question. At this point in our discussion, we're assuming that if the person hadn't preempted the breaking by, hadn't preempted the fall by banging it with a baseball bat, it would have broken on its own.
That's what the Gemara sounds like. Right? He says, I broke a broken kli. Like, that sounds like the kli was definitely going to break.
That's what appears. However, I understand that Yaakov is asking a very powerful question, which the Ramban asks. This is basically what the Ramban asks on Rashi. V'yesh derech acheret b'perush lo hashmua ba'atzma v'hushin afarish v'nomar d'rabba basar basof azil. Rabba is telling us not that we paskin basar meikara. Rabba is telling us that we paskin basar tavramana. V'ha'ad damrina b'gemara v'tifshot le'mi de Rabba hachi perusha tifshot the basar sof azlina. We come up with the opposite conclusion of Rashi. Midama Rabba ba acher usharo b'makil patur. The fact that Rabba related to the second party, v'lo amar rishon chayav, the isak adaitach basar meikara asil hava lemeima rishon chayav, vashmin and revusa, v'lo lema the sheni patur. The sheni afilu azras basar basof patur. Namely, the second person is going to be patur under all conditions. And so the raya of the Gemara is the fact that Rabba didn't say the first one was chayav, kind of he holds the first one's also patur. Why is the second person always patur? Kevan shesofa lehishaver. We're dealing, as Yaakov pointed out a moment ago, with a kli, which is currently worth nothing. The second person broke a kli that was headed to extinction, right? Sofa lehishaver, ein lo damim achshav. If we were to ask, you know, where it's a curator, how much is this vase worth when it's in motion on the way to the ground? They'll say, that vase, it's worth nothing, right? And so I took a bet and I broke something which is worthless. Ela vadai, mi de'itzrich le pitura de'sheni. In other words, from the fact that all that Rabba told us was the second one is patur, shbami no risham nami patur. Not only is the first one patur, the second one is also patur, the basar basof aslinan. This is very difficult on Rashi. What does that mean? In other words, my nafkamina, theoretically, who is responsible? The bottom line is that the second person broke something which is worth nothing. The second person should never, never be chayiv. Even if we want to say that we go after the end of the process, but the end of the process is breaking a broken kli. So, what according to the Gemara, according to the Ramban, had Rabba held Basar Meikara Azlinan, that the first one would have been Chayav. He would have said the first one is Chayav. Since Rabba didn't tell us anything about the first person, kind of the first person must be Pater. And therefore, Rabba only told us the second person is Pater. But he holds Basar Tavramana, that generally the second person is responsible, but here the second person simply broke something that's worthless. In other words, that we learn from Rabba the opposite conclusion than Rashi learned. According to Rashi, Rabba is the proof that Basar Mikara is lean. And according to the Ramban, in this Perush, the Rabba is proving us that Basar Tavramana Azlina. Now, this is a very powerful question on Rashi. Why, according to Rashi, were you to have held Basar Tavar Mana Azlinan, the second person would have been Chayav. But he broke something which is worthless. Why would it have been Chayav? What would it have been Chayav? So the Ramban simply leaves this as a question on Rashi. If you look over here, I thought I started for you, there's Reb Chaim on the Shas, that on this Sugya, that deals with the Rambam. We're not up to the Rambam yet. We'll get to the Rambam much later. But he basically asks the question, without quoting the Milchamos, that the Milchamos asks. He says, V'kasha, ma tzarech l'ta'am d'mana t'vira t'avar, ho ha'kli holech l'ibud l'hishaver v'yavud menu mikol adam, ein l'baylim u'pshita d'patur. In other words, why in the world could Rashi say that we learn now from this fact, this is going to practice this patur, that in processes we view things according to the end, what's that to do with the price of tea in China? This is you're breaking something which is worthless. So he adds in what Yaakov said, that I had the alternative. In other words, or 100 people had the alternative. There were firemen there that were running with a net to catch this vase that's being thrown off. This is a Chinese Ming vase which is worth $1 billion. So they're running, and then this fellow breaks it. In other words, it could have been saved. Namely, if you would have asked a curator, how much is it worth? Well, he said, well, it's not exactly worth $1 billion now, but it's still worth a few million because it has a good chance of survival. Then when the fellow breaks it, so then the question is, who's responsible, the thrower or the breaker? That we're dealing with a case of Mayri B'yochol Lahatzil Hakli. The question is, so what's the machlokas? Machlokas ben Metzius between Ramban and Rashi? In other words, that Rashi has to learn that we're dealing with something that could have been saved. And the Ramban, who asked the question on Rashi, assumed it could have been saved.
The question on whether there's a chiyuv to save it or not.
The question is, Is it worth anything when it's being broken? Currently, is it worth anything? Mm-hmm. That's a mitzius. That's a question of mitzius. If it could be saved, then it's worth something. If it couldn't have been saved, then it's worth nothing.
No, but if no one is chayev to save it, then we have a chazaka that's going
to
break.
Why? In other words, even no one's chayev to save it, but there are good people in the world.
But it's falling down. The only guy, he's the only one there. There's no fire.
Why are you
he's
assuming that? Maybe there's a whole audience.
There's a guy there with a stick. But, so you can either take the stick and whack it, or you can put down the stick and catch it.
You're in Yankee Stadium. Someone throws this Ming from the grandstand, right? He throws it towards the batter. There's a catcher and an umpire right behind the batter, right? The batter goes ahead and breaks it. Had he not broken it, maybe the catcher, that's his job. The catcher would have caught it. The umpire, right? He's a moral person. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been an umpire, right? So we have two moral. We have one person who's a mumch in catching, and another person who's a moral individual. And then we have this rotten hitter, right? Who just goes ahead and breaks it for because he's practicing batting, against Ming vases. Okay, so I don't know. That's Reb Chaim's scenario. That's his scenario in order to bring it back into the world of value. But the Ramban assumes, like you, that there's no one around, just this person with the bat. And if manashak, it's going to either fall or he's going to hit it.
I can have a mitzvah in which Rashi and Ramban would both be according to their shitas with the same mitzvah based on a halachic machlokes. Meaning, if the guy was chayev to catch it, then there's no chazaka that it's worthless. If it's not, he's not chayev to catch it, then it is worthless. There's no reason to evaluate it at a higher price than zero.
Yes. We have a Torah, and the Torah says that when you see an aveda, you're supposed to get involved. That's what the Torah says, right? In other words, you're supposed to get involved, and that's that's part of a mitzvah shavas aveda. So morally, the person holding the bat should have put down the bat and caught it. And okay, that's morally. In other words, he's mevatel, right. But we're not involved in his mitzvahs. He was mevatel the mitzvah of Vahashavas Aveda. He was mekayim v'hisaram tamehem. Okay. Our question is, does he owe money? Because normally, for being mevatel a mitzvah of Vahashavas Aveda, you're considered to be a grumma. You didn't cause the damage, just didn't prevent it. You see a ball rolling towards a sewer, so it'd be nice if you stopped it. But if you didn't, you're not chayav for the bull.
But still, that gets us out of Matisse's question into a halakha question, which is this guy who, he's not chayav to, he wouldn't be chayav for not catching it. But the fact that he has a mitzvah to catch it, does that change the value of the item?
Okay, I hear it. It's a good point. Okay, in any case, so we have Rashi, we have the Ramban. What does the Ravid say before we interpret each of these shitas? Together, Avol Haravid Zalpiresh. Look in the middle of the Rashi, but the Rashba learned like Rashi. That's Harav Shad. Haravid Piresh Sheshnehem Peturim Sheharishon Patur Af Algav Sheamduhu Li Shaver Shema Lo Hayanishbar VaHavileka Amduhu LeMisa VeChaya Shehu Patur. And according to the Ravid, the first person is always going to be Patur. Whether you hold basar meikara, whether you hold basar tavamana, the first person is always going to be potter. Why is the first person always going to be potter?
Who knows what's going to happen?
What?
I'll say, who knows what's going to happen? Maybe we're
going to even stronger than that. Why is the first person always going to be potter?
He didn't break it.
It's true. Had the second person not been there, maybe he would have been chayev. But once the second person is there, he didn't break it. And then the question is, he brings the raya. Ka'amduhu lamisa v'chaya shupater. That if I hit someone and they thought he was going to die, but he lives, I'm not a rotzeach. The bottom line is he lived. Namely, maybe he would have died had the doctors not intervened. But the moment the doctors intervene, he's alive. And so even though I would have been chayev as a rotzeach had the doctors not intervened, the moment they intervened, he's alive, I'm not a rotzeach. Here also, I would have been a mazik had someone not intervened. But the moment someone intervened, I'm not a mazik. How? And then the question is, what about the second person? The sheni nami pater kevam damdu lemisa amrinan mana tevira tova. And the second person, that already is totally in the machlokas. If we say that, you know, he broke a broken kli, he's pater. According to the Ravid, the first person is definitely potter because he didn't break it. What about the second person? Ah, that's totally in the machlokes, basar meikara or basar taramana. If we hold basar meikara, second person is potter. If we hold basar tavar mana, second person is chayev. Since Rabba said you're potter, so therefore basar meikara QED. Okay, so we have over here then, I was no longer bored here. We have over here, you can picture it, it's not that hard. Okay, in other words, that according to Rashi, in the case of Rabba, there are two alternatives. One alternative is the first is potter and the second is chayev. The second alternative is the first is chayev and second is potter. If we hold basar meikara, first is chayev, second is potter. If we hold basar tavamana, the second is chayev and the first is potter. Namely, it's an exact replica of Rabba's case. We have a process with a beginning and an end. And whatever Rabba says is the chiyuv of the second person, the opposite will be of the first. Since Rabba says the first is potter, it means since the second is potter, therefore the first is chayev. Masha'enken, according to Ramban, the second person, vaday is potter. He wrote something which is worthless. The whole issue is, what about the first person? Is he chayev because of basar meikara, or is he potter because of basar tavramana? Since Rabba didn't relate to the first person, kanere he held that he was potter. Okay? So if the first person is potter, that means basar tavramana comes up with the opposite conclusion. According to the Ravid, the first person is definitely potter. He didn't break it. How could he be chayev if he didn't break it? Nachon, had the second person not been there, we could have spoken. So the first person is definitely potter. What about the second person? Well, that depends. If we hold basar meikara, the maisa nezek was done by the first person, not the second. If we hold basar tavarmana, the maisa nezek was done by the second person, not the first. Since Rabba holds the second person is potter, so kaner'eh, he holds basar meikara. And what's at the bottom line of the Gemara is like Rashi. Okay, so we have Rashi and the Ravid on one hand, that we have a raya from Rabba that basar meikara. We have the second perush of the Ramban on the other hand, that we hold basar tavar mana. We learned it from Rashi, basar tavar mana. The first perush of the Ramban, I'm not ignoring, we'll get to it for next year. Okay, what's the first perush of the Ramban of the Sugya? But we don't need it for now, yes?
Could the second guy, it might be a stretch, but could the second guy say that the only reason he was in that situation was because of the first guy, like the Chaim that we saw, if the first guy trips and then the second guy trips over him and then he trips over a third person and the second guy...
Correct. As Benayo pointed out, there is nothing pushing the second person to break the kli. This is a totally volitional act on the part of the second party.
He's going out of his way to break the kli.
He's deciding to break the kli. I don't want to go out of his way. I mean, he may be just turning around in circles, but he's adam uad la'olam, and he is making, we're viewing him as the one who broke the kli. The question is that relevant or not when we have a process? Do we care about who's at the end of the process or not? That's Rava's baya. That's exactly his question. Okay. So now let's try just to understand what are the kudot hamachloket over here. So the words in the Gemara, the words of Rabba, mana tvira tavar. What do they mean according to the Ramban? Mana tvira tavar.
It was worthless when I broke it.
Right. He, mana tvira, a broken kli, a worthless kli, tavar. I broke a worthless kli.
I'm chayev all of zero.
Right. In other words, maybe chinami, you're chayev, but you broke something which is worthless. That's Rabba's bottom line. And since he didn't, that's all that he said, that's all that we need. We pointed out that Rashi and the Ravid kind of disagree. with definitely disagree with the Ramban. How do they learn mana tvira tavar? Hint. The Ramban, mana tvira tavar, at the time that it was hit by the bat, it was a worthless kli. Mana tvira, a kli which currently is worthless, is that which he broke.
And Rashi says it's going to break anyway.
Sharper.
It's headed to...
I mean, we see it as if it's already broken.
A kli that in the past was already broken, he broke. Namely, what, according to Rashi and the Ravid, we're not looking at currently when he's breaking it. We're saying the moment the first person threw it off the roof, he did a Maisa Nezek, that kli is considered to be his responsibility. You can't break a kli twice. The first person broke the kli by throwing it off the roof. Was it still worth something? Yeah, it was still worth something, but he did a Maisa Nezek by throwing it off the roof. And so the second person hit a kli that had already been broken. He broke a broken kli, broken in past. In other words, that as opposed to the Ramban, he broke a kli which currently is worthless. According to Rashi and the Ravid, he broke a kli that had been broken by the first person. That's what Rabbah is teaching us. Mana that basar meikara azlina. We view that first person as having done the maisa nezek. Okay, and therefore, if we hold basar meikara, the first person will be chayav. If we hold basar tavar mana, the first person would not be defined as the mazik, and he didn't break a kli that had already been broken. Okay, so we have a machlokas over here simply how to, if we were Schattenstein, how would we translate these three words, mana, tvira, tavar? Hopefully, Schattenstein would have a footnote and say, according to the Ramban, this means I am breaking a kli which currently is worthless. According to Rashi and the Ravid, it means I am breaking a kli which had already been broken by someone else. Okay? That's point number two. Point number okay, the Ravid. Okay, according to the Ravid. How can you have simultaneously that we learn basar mikara azlinan and still say the first person is pater? According to the Ravid, no matter whether basar mikara, basar tarvamana, the first person is pater. And yet, we learn that this kli, when it's in the air, is considered to be a broken kli. So if he broke it, isn't he chayav?
What?
No, it's not a suffix over here. According to the Ravid, in other words, Rabbah is teaching us mana tvira tavar, because the second person is pater. In other words, according to the Ravid, the whole question is the second person going to be chayav or pater? The first person is certainly pater, because he didn't break the kli. But if he didn't break the kli, why do we call that kli mana tvira tavar? According to the Ravid.
Can you explain the question?
Yeah. In other words, the Ravid says the first person is always going to be Pater because he didn't break the Kli. You can't be Chayv if you didn't break the Kli. What are we learning out from Rabbah? The din of the second person. Is the second person Chayv or Pater? Had we held Basar Miikara, the second person would be Pater. If we hold Basar Tavar Mana, the second person would be Chayv. And since Rabbah says that the second person is Pater, Kaneri holds Basar Meikara. But Rava is telling us Mana Tvira Tavar, that the reason the second person is Pater is because he broke a Kli that had been broken. So it means the first person broke it. So why is he Pater? And we're just to.
Why does it mean that the first person broke it? Just because the Kli now has a shame of being broken doesn't mean that the first guy actually did a Maisa that creates.
The first person created that chalos, right? But on a theoretical plane. Namely, the first person, we are saying, did a maisa nezek. Throwing something off a roof of the maisa nezek. Basar meikara. When you have a process that begins with something throwing something off a roof and it ends with it hitting the ground, you're chayav for throwing it off the roof. That's the maisa nezek. However, even though you did a maisa nezek, Bezin is going to say you're potter because you didn't break it. You did a maisa nezek that didn't result in you're damaging the kli. So on one hand, if we ask this kli, is it a kli on which a maisa nezek had already been done? The answer is yes. And therefore Rabbah says, basar mana tvira tavar. I broke a kli on which a maisa nezek has already been done. In other words, so it turns out he's potter because he didn't break it. I'm potter because you can't break a kli twice. In other words, I did a maisa nezek on a kli on which there already had been a maisa nezek. But, in other words, is the first person chayav? It turns out, retroactively, he's not chayav for that maisa nezek. And according to the Ravid, we have a very, very beautiful, paradoxical situation. Okay, then I have now one last question for you. What would be, according to the Ramban, if the first person threw a kli off the roof and then ran down very, very quickly, and before it hit the ground, he broke it with a baseball bat? We only have one person in the picture.
He'd still be potter.
Paradoxically, he'd be potter, right? Why? Because the person who broke the kli broke something that was worthless. He brought it about a situation to be worth. That's grandma. And with, according to the Ramban, you could come up with a situation that, you know, where it's where, you know, you can use a halacha in a very diabolical manner. Okay. Now, again, this person is not going to get mashgiach Yonah. Clearly, he's chayav midei shamayim.
But if he's an insurance broker, you might be able to bid for it.
But the bottom line is that he broke something that was worthless. Okay. And since we pass him basar tavar mana, so he's not chayav for throwing it off the roof. And when you have a process, you only chayav for the end of the process. And at the end of the process, it was worthless. Okay, you can disagree if you want to and say that the Ravid, what Rama was talking about, such a case. But that's up to you. Okay, where I'd like to move to, you have this should be a page of Mar Makoma. Okay, it's now 10:20. Means that you still have. An hour, 2 hours, 2 hours and 40 minutes today, and you have another almost 3 hours on 2 hours and 45 minutes on Sunday. So if we can move over into this Tosfos, I don't know if you have a chance to look at it, where Tosfos's bottom line is, there's a difference between throwing a rock and throwing a kli. In other words, is there a difference between throwing a kli off the roof or throwing a rock at the kli when someone else intervenes? Tosfos takes for granted a certain approach. In other words, there's a ksos that says that there's a rush who disagrees with Tosfos. So I'd like you to see the rush that's involved. The rush is in Perek Beis, Siman Beis. There's a little nun of the Pilpul HaKharifta in a bracket. That's where we're beginning. It's called 3 lines of the rush. The rush is not talking about Tosfos' case, but the ksos says we have over here Machlokas, Tosfos, and rush. So first, I want you to see the Sos, then I want you to tell me why. No, there's no machlokes. We can distinguish for a number of possibilities. And then there's the Muke Yosef, a very, very, probably the most well-known Muke Yosef in all of Baba Kama, about Isham Isham Chitzav, that we will look at together, who deals with a whole bunch of topics, but it also relates to our issue. Is there a difference between throwing a kli and throwing a rock? Shooting an arrow is the equivalent of throwing a rock. Okay. That will be A. Then move over to B is really the next sugya that begins over here with Tashma, bottom 2 lines of Yud Zayin of the days, until you get to, I think are there 2 dots or not 2 dots? No, there aren't 2 dots, but it's the equivalent of 2 dots on Yud Chesem and Aleph. About the middle of the Amud. The Gemara, as you see, there's very little Rashi. It's a very, you know, sort of, you know, shot Bekiistik of Gemara. But it's not so Bekiistik of Gemara, because what we have is 2 riffs. And the Baal HaMor says, you can't have these 2 riffs. They're so sere one another. And Baal HaMor just throws up his hands.
And the Ramban says, no, there's no problem. Why? So he gives one teretz that we haven't yet seen, and a second teretz that we've already seen. These are two teretz of the Ramban. But what we're going to see is that we have a similar issue within the Rambam. Not only within the Rik, also within the Rambam. Again, we have two Rambams. I sent in the first Rambam to look at the regular Mahadura and the Mahadura Frankel. It's very just fascinating how, you know, it's, you can see in Frankel's Mahadura how someone made a mistake in the regular print of the Rambam. But in any case, you know, we'll follow the halacha according to the Mahadura Frankel. And again, we have to deal with this issue of there appears to be a stira. And then afterwards, we'll see, well, there perhaps there are other ways, aside from the Ramban, of dealing with this issue. And so look at the Rashba and look at Rabbeinu Hananel, how they learned the Gemara over here on Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph. What's the bottom line of the Gemara of the Ka'azil Mine Mine? So I think you can do it, in other words, but again, I'll try and get it as far as you get. And Amir Sashem, Davin Tekash Baruch Hu, that we should be able to learn together. Again, I apologize that I will not be able to keep all the regular chavrusas, but if I can come in to give shir at this point, wow, that's really what I'm happy about. Okay? So, all these are sort of questions.